You are listening to The Vitals, a twice monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncologynursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Hi everyone, this is Lindsay Fisher, editor at Oncology Nursing News. In this episode of The Vitals, we spoke with Jackie Garcia and Kristen Hendrickson to discuss phase zero trials, also known as window of opportunity trials, in neuro-oncology. Phase zero trials are designed to identify new drugs capable of slowing tumor progression in patients who face poor prognoses. Patients who enroll in a phase zero trial receive a subtherapeutic dose of an agent prior to undergoing surgery, and when the tissue is resected, investigators determine whether the agent penetrated the blood-brain barrier and whether the agent had the anticipated effect. According to Garcia, who is a nurse navigator, and Hendrickson, who is a research program manager, phase zero trials are important because they offer patients with brain tumors another potential treatment option.
Hi, my name is Kristen Hendrickson. I am a nursing research program manager. I work here at the Ivy Brain Tumor Center in Phoenix, Arizona.
And I'm Jackie Garcia. I'm a nurse navigator here at the Ivy Brain Tumor Center in Phoenix, Arizona. My role is patient support and education, essentially.
Wonderful. Really great to have you both. So when you first meet a patient, what are you assessing for during that first interaction?
I'm normally the one who has the first introductions before Kristen will come into the picture. There's a couple ways that I can meet patients is one coming through our clinic versus coming in through the emergency room in our hospital. My point of contact is in clinic, coming in and just kind of touching base, talking about kind of their symptoms and things like that. And we try to screen as best we can for any potential clinical trial options that we have at that point in time. Also too, if they come in through the emergency room, all of Dr. Sinai's patients I follow. And so I will come in and touch base and wherever they're at in our planning process, I will come in and kind of walk them through what that process is. So if we have a surgical plan already, talk to them about what that looks like and kind of what to expect in the coming days. Also to trying to identify if there's any potential clinical trial options for all these patients. So there's a lot of eyes on patients in general, and we're trying to give them every possible option that we have to offer here at Barrow and Ivy Brain Tumor Center.
Once it has been determined that the patient is a surgical candidate and is being recommended for a phase zero trial, then the research nurse team has discussions with the patient where we, you know, talk about the requirements for the clinical trial, we want to assess the patient and make sure that they can consent for the clinical trial. We look for if they meet all of the inclusion criteria for the trial and don't meet any of the exclusion criteria. So we're looking at kind of the whole picture as well.
Wonderful. Thanks. And so you started to touch on this. And like, how do you know if a patient would be a good candidate for a phase zero? I know you mentioned that, you know, clinical trials, you look at the inclusion criteria, you look at the exclusion criteria. And what kind of things are you typically asking and assessing for?
So all of our phase zero patients have to be recommended for resection. So that is the first thing. And that resection would be standard of care. So the way that a phase zero trial operates is we need to be able to give a patient a short subtherapeutic dose of a medication that they're matched with. And then during surgery, we would remove that tissue and other types of specimens such as blood and cerebral spinal fluid to determine whether or not the drug reached its target and if it had its intended biological effect. So that is obviously one of the first things we look at. And then, you know, obviously the surgeon would be recommending what trial it is. And, you know, if they can abide by the visit requirements and responsibilities of the trial.
Great. And to take a step back, can I ask, could you explain what are phase zero trials and, you know, how can they benefit patients?
You know, and I'll kind of start off with just how I explain it to patients when they first come in. Because for us, it's a very basic concept in general, but it can seem kind of complex. And so what do I explain to them is that, you know, what we're trying to do is put all these treatment options on the table. How we do this is, you know, we have this drug that we feel like could be a potential benefit for you. We're going to take this drug prior to having surgery. We're going to do the surgery that we would be recommending anyways. And then when we take the tissue out, we're going to analyze it and make sure that the drug made it into the tissue and also is having the desired effect that we wanted to have. So the phase zero process is essentially that, is giving a drug prior and then analyzing the tissue, making sure it got there, making sure it's having the desired effect. And we can answer the questions, those two questions, within a matter of 2 weeks, 10 days to 2 weeks for these patients. So we're not losing any time for these patients. And if they don't qualify for the phase two portion, we're still at that same point that we would have been with anyways without the clinical trial. So it's really just a way of putting a little, I would say, icing on the cake for them, of giving every possible treatment option for that. I think Kristen gets a little bit more into the details of it and a little more technical. So
I would just add that the reason that we do phase zero trials is that it expedites and quickens the pace of drug development and being able to give those promising medications to patients with high-grade gliomas. You know, GBM in general is under... Our research is underfunded for glioblastoma traditionally. There are 85,000 new diagnoses a year, and almost 18,000 of those patients will pass away in that same year from glioblastoma. So there is a definite need for us to improve the drug discovery and delivery methods for our patients. And so really what a phase zero trial does is it gives us an opportunity to just give subtherapeutic doses, just enough of the drug to determine whether or not it crossed the blood-brain barrier, which has been traditionally one of the obstacles in treating patients with certain types of brain tumors, in a short amount of time with minimal side effects. And then the icing on the cake, so to speak, as she said, is that the patients that do show penetration of the drug in the tumor and do show biological effects from that drug are given the opportunity to continue taking the medication in a more therapeutic, traditional chemotherapy setting.
Interesting. Yeah. And so I know you mentioned like this is pretty low risk. You know, are there any risks to these trials that you talk to patients beforehand?
Yes, of course. I mean, you know, we do extra assessments, such as we draw extra blood, we do, you know, EKGs. In the informed consent, of course, we will lay out all the potential side effects that are possible, but I always try to remind the patients that the risk of having serious side effects is minimized in a phase zero setting, just because you're taking the drug for a very, very shortened amount of time. The risk does go up if they continue taking the medication in an expansion or a phase two setting, but then also so does the monitoring of the patient.
Yeah, I would say, though, in my experience with our patients that have gone on this, so they've done really well, and we haven't had a lot of issues with people having extreme side effects from any of the drugs.
That's great. And are there any other questions that you find when you first pitch this to them, questions they have or things they want to talk through?
So, I mean, a lot of times, most of the interactions that we have with patients from the phase zero clinical trials, I think, is going to be at recurrence, right? You know, so they've already got the diagnosis, you know, and right now they're just looking for anything that can help them, you know? So I think a lot of the questions that I get in general are just one, understanding what does the surgical process look like? What does their hospital stay look like? Things like that, you know? But I think my focus more so in general for the patients at that point in time is just really trying to support them through this. I think Kristen gets more of the in-depth clinical trial questions.
Most patients will ask about how other patients that have gone before them are doing, and what the survival of those patients are. And of course, with the fast-paced trials that we do here, a lot of times I don't have long-term data to share with them at that time. But I always try to say to them, especially for the newer trials that patients are enrolling in, is that us opening a new trial is a culmination of years of, you know, scientific experiments, you know, in the preclinical setting. And we take everything that we learned from previous trials and apply that to the newest trial. So, you know, I always say that those are the best to enroll in, is that, you know, these are the most advanced. We're applying everything that we've learned so far to the newer trials. And so those are the ones that to me are really exciting as well.
Yeah.
After they go through surgery, I know you said some patients will elect to then continue these drugs in a more traditional therapeutic setting. And even if they don't, what does the afterwards process, do they continue to meet with you and check in with your team, or do they kind of move on to other supportive teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think that can go both ways. It's really up to the patient. The bottom line is we're here to support them through this process. So if for some reason they don't continue on to the phase two portion, on the surgical side, my side with working with Dr. Sinai, is we continue to monitor these patients. And even if they go, say they don't qualify for phase two and they decide to pursue a clinical trial elsewhere, you know, we still support them in that. We still kind of stay in their back pocket and continue to be a resource for them if for some reason they need us again down the road, you know.
And when it comes to clinical trial requirements, if a patient you know, has taken the study drug, then it is required that we do safety assessments after they're complete. And then all of our protocols require, I think it's every 3 months, survival follow-ups so that we know how they're doing.
And I don't know if this is a given or if this has been kind of covered too, is that the drugs that we're using are all safe drugs. They've already been FDA approved in treatments of other kinds of cancer. So it's really just how can we utilize these drugs in different avenues is what we're really trying to sort out. So the biggest thing that I like to stress in this, because, you know, GBM patients, that's a majority of the patients that I deal with, and it's a devastating diagnosis. It's very challenging to treat. And the big thing I always tell people when I'm talking to other healthcare providers is it's not our job to tell the patients what to do, but it's our job to give them every possible treatment option. And so even if it's not a clinical trial with us or it's treatment somewhere else, you know, they need to do what they feel is best for them. But as a healthcare provider, we need to make sure that these patients are looking at clinical trials and enrolling them, just because it is such a challenging disease that if they're not exploring other avenues, we might be missing a point for them. And, you know, there are long-term survivors out there. And this is really what we're trying to push, is to have more long-term survivors. You know, I've seen them here. I've seen them other places. They're out there. And so for people who have a view of this disease is that as soon as you get this, this is a terminal diagnosis. You know, just know that there is some elements of hope out there. There are different courses for each patient, but we want to make sure that they are exploring every avenue that they have to possibly treat this diagnosis.
And I think us as an institute, or as a clinical trials program, we really want to try to reach underserved populations as well, who may have absolutely no knowledge of clinical trials coming into this. And so it's really important that those populations also know that there are multiple treatment options for them to consider, so they can make the best informed decision for themselves and their families.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with Oncology Nursing News.